Welcome to Virtual Economy, a podcast about the business of games for the rest of us. We're your hosts. I'm Michael Footer.
And I'm Amanda Farrow.
Each episode will cover the biggest business beats and bring in expert commentary from lawyers, analysts, and industry pros.
And today we have our first returning guest.
Yay!
No one has come back until today, which, you know, I mean, we've talked to a lot of people. But Ava came back.
Hi.
We're joined today by the inimitable Ava Carr, founder of Glitch. It's an amazing indie label that's published Hyperdot and Optica. So if you want to know all about Ava's amazing work, her origin story and getting into the game industry, her origin story is fantastic, by the way. We spoke at length on episode 7, but for today, we are absolutely delighted to have Ava back with us to talk about a new initiative that she's helping to organize, which is the Galaxy Fund. Ava, my darling, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm really excited to talk to you two about this.
Oh,
we're excited to hear some more.
We are so psyched to hear more about this. So let's just jump right in. Let's talk about the Galaxy Fund, what the Galaxy Fund is and who the key players are.
The fund itself is started just by me, and I actually pulled in Anna as well, Anna Diaz, to help out a little bit with editing because she's way better at writing than I am. But those are really the only two people who are, you know, like organizing this project. I really started this project and the Galaxy Fund really as it was just an idea. It to me, it was like building something from nothing. And the fund itself is really focused on the earliest stages of development, which is a prototype. So it's kind of like that first juice or like the initial ideas on a napkin or like a few boxes that move on a screen. That's really what the fund itself is. And personally, I believe it's really the most important and also the most energizing parts of game development. And so this first round of the Galaxy Fund is being awarded as a $50,000 unrestricted prototype grant to really freaking like 5 brilliant women, specifically like Black women and one queer founder as well. And each founder can use this fund however they really see fit for themselves and also for their business. So that could mean, you know, childcare, it could mean hardware, software, coaching, legal, part-time staff. Therapy, really anything that they feel like is really important for them to be able to create, you know, that something from nothing. And I know just, you know, from running my own company that like it's one of the most important pieces of just getting started. And so really, it doesn't matter what they truly use it for. Like if it's, you know, for childcare so that someone can take care of their child while they actually work on the game, that's dope. And so I really want the fund itself to support that. And again, like it doesn't matter as long as they can share a prototype with us, specifically us meaning all of the funders of the fund, you know, within 2 years. And I felt like that was really reasonable. And I talked to, you know, Kat and Latoya and all of these people who are receiving the fund to see if that makes sense. And they were like, yep, this is great. This is dope. Let's do it.
That's really wonderful. So who is involved in funding and managing the fund?
Got it. So who's involved with funding? So the way that I had ended up setting this up was actually through a GoFundMe. So I'm primarily just managing it right now. And as for who is funding, it's the community. One of the reasons that I had actually set it up as a GoFundMe was because I felt like it was really important that, you know, this fund is community funded. Again, like just as a founder myself, fundraising is really tough. Fundraising is really tough for a bunch of different reasons. Mm-hmm. And, you know, fundraising is tough, especially when you are just starting out. I was really lucky to have like my university offer a $50,000 round for me, but I know that's not the case for everybody. And it's something that I recognized is really rare and just needs to exist. And it, there wasn't like any strings attached to that. There wasn't anything that, you know, I needed to pay back. It was just take this fund, run with it, and figure it out. Like, tell us what is going to work for you, and find something that, you know, is possibly going to change. You know,
it's like a paid for incubation process. That's really, really interesting.
Yeah, I again, just I hadn't really thought about it a ton other than the fact that like it's so important to have funding at that early stage where there are no strings attached, that you can basically take it and run with it. And so that's how this all got started. And that's why it's set up as a GoFundMe. There's no one that's really, you know, going to say like, hey, you can or can't do that.
Right.
I've just set up a couple of times where like, hey, let's just talk. So I'm just catching up with all of these folks who are receiving the fund just to like see how they're doing. kind of like moral support and cheerleading more than anything. and then, you know, at the end of all of this, within the 2 years, like I really, you know, and all of us involved, like really want to be able to show everyone who's funded and has supported this, like what was made out of it. And I'm really excited to see what that looks like.
Me too.
I'm so freaking excited to see what that looks like.
Well, I'm sorry, Mike, please go ahead.
No, I was just going to point out, that one of the great things about this is that it is a grant fund and not an investment fund. Because often when we hear about funding in the industry
and raising money
in general, it's with some kind of quid pro quo.
Yeah.
And I don't say that, you know, in a sinister way. It's just, hey, I'm going to give you X number of dollars. Mm-hmm. And if you, you know, if we decide to continue funding, whether that's we get first right of refusal or points on the back end or something like that. But this is pure altruism.
This is completely and entirely a grant fund. And that's why I think it's really important that it is community funded. There's essentially a ton of people who are saying like, hey, you've already done the work. You're already amazing. You are dope. Look at your portfolio. And you know, here's money to figure out what's next. Like, I am excited to see what these folks come up with over the next 2 years as a prototype. And like, I think it's so important for us in the industry as well to be able to put money towards. And I know like big companies do this, like they have the whole R&D teams, right? That just experiment and test forever. But like, you know, for someone who's starting up their own company, and especially for, you know, Black, Indigenous, people of color, women, queer folks, like it's very uncommon to be able to be given the reins of a pool of funding and say, like, spend it how it makes sense for you to get to a prototype. Like, that's almost non-existent, except for in certain scenarios where, you know, you might live in a region that does have like a media arts fund or something of sorts, right? That's available to you, but still very few and far between.
Yeah.
I actually managed one of those grants. when I lived in Rochester, New York, I managed a grant that was funded by the New York Foundation for the Arts called SOS. And for the life of me, I can't remember if that stood for anything or not. But the goal of the fund was to help people take advantage of opportunities, artists to take advantage of opportunities they wouldn't otherwise be able to. So it was the same sort of thing. It's like, oh, you need to pay for elder care so that you can go out of town, or you need to pay for child care or rent a car or something like that so you can go and take advantage of this. And it was, these were not large amounts of money. I think they, by the time I left, they capped at $800.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
They made big differences, and we gave them 3 times a year.
Yeah, that's so amazing.
These funds are so important.
Yeah. And honestly, like from my experience also working in the nonprofit side for a little while, like that's a whole nother beast in of itself. Oftentimes grants and why I wanted this to be like community funded, you know, it's not VC, it's not, you know, a foundation sponsored grant, is because, again, like, we've worked with nonprofits and foundations for a very long time, I think over like 6 or 7 years now. And usually in that scenario too, Mike, like what kind of reporting did you all have?
A final report with receipts, I think, is pretty much the extent of the reporting on that one. Again, okay. We tried to make sure that the reporting on grants was commensurate with the amount of money we were giving. So
yeah.
Making somebody jump through giant final report hoops for $600 or $800 didn't make a lot.
Yeah. And then also the application as well, which can oftentimes mm-hmm. also be a barrier.
So like,
and these were very thin yeah. applications for that reason also.
Yeah. And I love that your organization did that, but that's not always the case.
Nope.
And so when I'm thinking about like grants, it's one thing to just say like, hey, you're awesome, please do this, like community fund it. Is like community funding it is just so important, so that there are just as few barriers as possible for the application, the reporting, and just focus on making. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. I could go for days on on the nonprofit side of grant making, but that can be for another time.
I'm sure
time.
Both of you could. And I would just sit yes. here and I would just listen enraptured, because I am Jon Snow. I know nothing. But stuff I do know about were some stats that I pulled up, because I really want to drill. I really, really, really want it to, because I've been beating the diversity and inclusion drum. Ava, you know me. I beat this drum all the time. This is my thing. So I really want to talk about why this fund absolutely needs to exist. And a few stats that I ended up bringing up is I went and I looked at Catalyst, which has been around since the 70s, I think. And it's a U.S. research firm, and it's dedicated to advancing women in the workplace. And so according to Catalyst, in 2019, women of color represented 18% of entry-level positions. Few advanced to leadership positions. 12% ended up as managers, 9% ended up as directors, 7% as VPs, 5% as senior vice presidents, and only 4% ended up in C-suite positions. And in 2019, Black and Hispanic women made up an even smaller percentage of total women employed in management, in comparison to white and Asian women. Mm-hmm. But the most important thing about this is that, you know, we look at how important diversity is to building interesting, well, and meaningful products, you know, and at the end of the day, as much as we want to say like games are art, and yes, games are art, but games are commercial art.
Yeah.
But games are commercial art, and they're still products, and they can still be art, and they can still move us to tears and to sweeping bouts of joy and to dancing in our seats and everything like that. But, you know, Harvard Business Review really did have like a really good, decent breakdown, is like firms with the most ethnically diverse executive teams were 33% more likely to outperform their peers on profitability, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah. That
like, yeah. These are numbers, man. You cannot argue mm-hmm. with numbers. And it's even better when you have women of color in executive mm-hmm. positions. So those are some really like grounding numbers that yeah. diversity and inclusion at the founder level is so, so, so important. It needs to be mm-hmm. like, we talked last week about how D&I needs to be baked into corporate mandates right from the beginning, so that it's part of the culture. And who better than to beat that drum is women and BIPOC folks and queer folks going out and making amazing games. So Ava, I need to know, what spurred this need for this fund right now?
There's so many levels of answers to this, but like my immediate answer is I think it's one, it's needed.
Yes.
Two, I think it's the right thing to do. And three, I think it's a really smart business move. And I'll be real with you on that. But my honest answer is just that I'm so dang tired. And I think like that's like that is the root of my answer, is just that I'm so tired. And I think especially in the wake of COVID, you know, the murder of George Floyd and also this third wave, I think at least to me, it feels like the third wave, but I feel like also it's maybe the 10th or 20th wave of these Me Too stories that are coming out in the games industry right now
yeah.
to highlight an abuse of power at the leadership level. So I swear, like almost every day, and Amanda, this might be why you're like, oh, I'm thinking about the Galaxy Fund so much. It's something very similar in me, which I find myself wondering, like, what would it feel like to work in an industry that really values people over product, to work in an ecosystem that begins maybe or is at least designed with love, care, and justice in mind. And I also find myself daydreaming about what it would feel like if games could be built, you know, in a way where we could see changes and it changes within game styles and gameplays, but also changes that we could potentially see where equity is at the leadership level. So those are the things that I constantly am daydreaming about, especially right now. And I think that, you know, part of just getting this thing out there in the world, you know, as I was starting to think about it and creating it, it was about a week in some's work. And then I pulled Anna and I was like, hi, Anna, could you please do this thing? Could you please read this for me? Like, am I being like too intense right now? I couldn't get it off my mind, and I haven't been able to for years, but I think like this was all of these things in a row. It felt like it just needed to happen. And I didn't even want to wait to like go talk to our foundation or financing partners or anything of sorts. I was just like, I just want it out in the world, because if I have to wait for another person to approve this thing, or like I have to convince six other people to make the thing happen, then like, yeah. I'm so just sick of it. And so that's why I felt like it was really important that it was a community-driven fund and that we could make it happen right now.
Yeah, the immediacy of the Galaxy Fund, like, because this has been up for what, a week now, I think?
It was last Thursday. Yeah, I think I had posted it last Thursday, so we're 6 days in. So tomorrow will be 1 week.
And the fund is actually doing really, really well. I'm so excited to see more community participation. But I'm excited, like I am ecstatic to see what kinds of projects are going to come out of this fund. Like Kat's amazing. Mm-hmm. So that I'm psyched about already. I'm like, oh, show me the games she's going to make.
Yeah. I mean, like, okay, let me talk for like 5 seconds about the people who are receiving the funds.
Yes, please do.
Stein, who is the co-owner and founder of Super Retro Duck. You may have seen some of her games, like the whole Tiny Bird Garden series. It's like out everywhere and you get to play like this. You essentially get to, I don't know, raise birds. Like that's the best thing that I can talk about is like you get to raise birds and they're so dang cute. Latoya Peterson, who's the co-founder of Glow Up Games, and they ended up just recently partnering with HBO's Insecure to make their game, like the Insecure game.
Nice.
And Latoya's just, I can't even, like she is like I would say a power user, but like she's just powerful and I love that so much about her. She does so much, and Kat Small is also one of the recipients, and Kat's been making games for so dang long. And when I first heard of Kat, she had co-founded Brooklyn Gamery, and they had made so many different games. But Sweetheart is the one that I had been playing recently, and it deals so much with, you know, the complexities of being a Black woman currently in this ecosystem. And Jules, who's actually in Minnesota, I had to throw someone who isn't from Minnesota in there for sure. But Jules, I can't believe this. She's a part lawyer and part game developer. And she just founded Seraph 7, and she's currently prototyping her first game right now.
Oh, nice.
Ultimate Elder Battle Royale, which is a fighting game. It's a fighting game featuring folks from who are essentially aged and retired superheroes. Pretty dope. And then the fifth person.
I will play this game.
Yeah.
Sounds pretty rad. I'm not going to lie to you.
It looks really like superhero-y. It's dope. Yeah, and then Geneva, who Geneva Hayward, who is currently still working on Skate and Date, but it's been you know, successfully crowdfunded, and it has such a lovely aesthetic where you are a woman who is essentially like the leader of a like of a roller derby team, and you just happen to fall in love or be super into a woman on the other opposing team, the rival team, and you kind of have to woo them into falling in love with you by showing how good you can skate. Aww. It's amazing. So
that appeals to my Canadian heart.
I'm scrolling through the thread that you posted on Twitter now.
Oh,
oh my goodness. Elder Battle looks amazing.
I know, right? Like, you know, the pictures at least that I had posted are of two characters that Jules is currently creating. And one of those characters, I don't remember their names right now. Mike, you have them up. Could you?
Let me see if there's, I don't know if there are names on the characters. There's one that looks very Egyptian. Yeah. And there's one that looks super Tron.
Yes. And that's the black woman. And she just, like, she could kick my ass. And,
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Without a doubt. Like, this isn't even a competition.
Yeah. And I don't know. I love the idea. And I'm very excited to see what they all build with, you know, essentially this prototype fund, whether it's, you know, with Jules finishing up Elder Battle for her prototype to get it to a playable, or Kat making her next prototype. Like, that's super exciting for me to see what comes out of it. And I hope that folks stay tuned as well to see what, you know, people are making. And we should come back at some point to talk about what ends up happening after the, you know, after everyone's wrapped up with their prototypes.
I love that.
100%. You'll get the hat trick.
Where are they? Where are they now?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Where are they now?
That sounds super rad. So just systemically, because obviously a number of things that have emerged over the past few weeks, there are some major systemic problems in the game industry. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, how do you want to see the game industry, especially in the indie spaces, change for BIPOC developers and creators?
That's a really good question. I think a lot of what drives my work is this desire to create systems that really explore love, joy, and these like playful acts of rebellion. And so these kind of experimental game loops that really add energy to players instead of taking has been at the top of my mind. And I've noticed that a lot of creators who are doing some of the most interesting work in these spaces are from these communities. And so, you know, equity is really important to me, and eliminating the equity gap that we currently have in this industry is critical. And I also think that it's really important to start that at the leadership level. And I hope that in some capacity, or at least even in some small fraction of all of this, like the Galaxy Fund can be at least the starting point of the conversation. And so that's what I really hope to see in the games industry, and especially in the indie spaces right now.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, so you and I have had this conversation. I know we had this conversation offline when we were both at the Game Developers of Color Expo last year, which I am missing deeply.
Because I'm missing it so much.
It was legitimately my favorite event of last year. There were so many cool games. The energy was so warm and so beautiful. And like, I could have made a home there. If I could have just lived at GDOC, that would be the greatest.
Yeah, just like right next to, just the seat right next to Sean. Alexander, yes. And then just heckling him the whole time.
100%. But yeah, like we've had this conversation is that we're at this point where we need to stop having the diversity 101 conversations. And like Victoria 100%. Tran, who has also been on our show, did this hilarious TikTok earlier today talking about like getting hit in the face with like all of these problems in the game development in like the game industry. And like, we're still focusing on the wrong things.
Yeah.
And diversity 101 is like the biggest culprit of that, where it's just like, okay, well, we have to learn to how to have the conversation and then have the mm-hmm. conversation. It's like, no. Where have you been for the last 15 years? We've been having this conversation for a long time.
It's about listening.
Exactly.
Like, I think that you're right. Like, the conversations have been had, but, you know, there's not necessarily, there's the missing part of feeling seen and feeling heard. Mm-hmm. And there's action that needs to happen beyond that.
Yeah, because conversations are one thing, but if we're not turning that conversation into real action, and we're just talking with the same kinds of people over and over again and doing these presentations and these panels, and as necessary as especially the 201, 301 diversity panels that I've been seeing more and more of, which are fantastic. Even those conversations are not necessarily, like, it's not enough.
Yeah.
We need to keep moving forward. So I feel like, you know, the Galaxy Fund is going to keep this moving forward, and it's going to keep funding where it needs to be, which is in the community. And it's giving to the, you know, it's giving to the developers that are going to be making these bonkers games. And I love that they're tiny acts of rebellious love. Like, that to me, you already know you speak my language, but oh my goodness, that calls to me on such a deep level. But I have one more question for you, Ava.
Yeah.
One more question. So beyond the Galaxy Fund, what are the best ways that everybody, so anybody listening to this podcast today, like when the podcast goes live, to continue to support especially women of color in indie games? What else can we be doing? What else should our listeners be doing?
Yeah. So beyond the Galaxy Fund, I think really the biggest things that we can be thinking about is funding games from these creators and these communities, buying games from creators in these communities. And then I think, you know, if the games aren't your thing, that's totally okay. That's fine. But the way that I think about it too is like, if financing the revolution is a barrier too, right? Like, if funding and financing and if buying things is a barrier, then consider sharing, consider advocating on behalf of, so that others can contribute as well. And, you know, even I would love to say, and I think speaking to the two of you as well, right? Like, if you work in media, highlighting and amplifying the work from these communities, like, I think you two are incredible examples of allies. And I think it's really important because you two, you know, you do it because you think this work is important and worthy of your time and attention. So mm-hmm. like, really, wherever your skills are at and whatever you have that you can contribute to, you know, this new way of thinking, or, you know, just start doing and figuring out a way to contribute. And again, it can be as small as, you know, a retweet. It can be as big as, you know, figuring out ways to hire more people who are from these communities, and doing it in a way that's authentic to you. And I think that's a really freaking good start. And that'll get us at least to that next phase, right?
That's awesome. And we do want to continue showcasing indies here on Virtual Economy. And if you're an indie developer who has a cool prototype or a game that's in development or a game that just recently came out, we'd love to spotlight you. We'd love to have you on the show. You can send us a DM at Virtual Econcast, or you can shoot us an email at podcast@fsquared.biz.
Yes, and then let's make sure that the five people. Well, if they have enough energy, well, maybe like in July. But I'd love to have the folks who are recipients of the fund come and talk to you all if you all are open to that.
That sounds like an amazing roundtable, and I'm in.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Yay, I'm so excited.
That sounds wonderful. I'd love. Ah, that is a great idea.
Yeah, yes, I would love that. Sounds amazing. And I'm sure they'd have a lot to share. And I know that energy is a little low right now, just because, you know, we're in June and it's
gestures wildly.
Just gestures. Yeah, that's exactly it. Like gestures. But it sounds like they might be a good handful of them were like, yes, we'd be open to having conversations in July. So
perfect. That sounds great. Yes, wonderful. And on that note, this has been episode 27. Oh my goodness, we've had 27 episodes of Virtual Economy. Thank you for tuning in. You can follow us on Twitter. We are at Virtual Econcast. I am at Amanda Farrow.
And I am at Footerish, F-U-T-T-E-R-I-S-H.
And Ava, where can folks find you online?
I'm at Ava Carr, E-V-V-A-K-A-R-R on Twitter and everything else.
Excellent. Awesome.
And if this is your first time listening to Virtual Economy, welcome.
Welcome.
We are delighted to have you. If you would like to subscribe to the show, which we would absolutely love for you to subscribe to the show, you can do so at virtualeconomy.libsyn.com/RSS. You can also listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, which apparently might be sold in the near term, and other podcast services. And if you can review the show on your platform of choice, we'd love for that too. We want to know what you think.
And if you aren't comfortable sending us feedback via public platform, which, you know what, I get it. I understand. Sometimes you just want to chat with us one-on-one. We get it. So you can DM us. Our DMs are open over on Twitter, or you can send them to podcast@fsquared.biz. And speaking of F Squared, Virtual Economy is an F Squared initiative. And along with pro bono business consulting for up-and-coming indie developers, it's a way that we are working to give back to the community that has already given us so much. You can to find out more about F Squared and the services we can provide, including pitch prep, media training, mock reviews, and business strategy guidance, you can visit our website at fsquared.biz.
And that about does it for this episode, and we'll be back soon. In the meantime, wash your hands, stay hydrated, and be good to one another.
We'll see you next time.